podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Mirror man, you twist and turn my mind until I don't know who I am. Mirror man.
Good morning and welcome to a new edition of the Arsenal Opinion Podcast. I am joined with man like Matt Candela.
Hi,
sorry,
Pete.
Johnny, I love saying it.
Got to.
I'm going to steal it. And I'm joined by the one, the only, Johnny Cochran. Guys,
what
how, we feeling
how
today?
We doing?
How we feeling? Is this real? Is this real? We keep on winning under pressure.
I mean, let's get realistic. That was a massive win. And this isn't even hottest takes yet. This is preamble before hottest takes. So I don't want to reveal too much. But overall, if you're not getting seriously excited as an Arsenal fan, I don't know what we're doing it for. It's great stuff. Elton John, your men took a beating today, all right? Have that, Elton. Have that. We came into Vicarage and we took all the points. Let's go.
Matt, what's your pre-hottest take vibe?
I'm just so happy. I'm really, really happy. It was like peak Wenger ball out there at times. Just delicious. I think Arsenal are back. We've got some of the hottest young talent in Europe. I'm absolutely buzzing. Every game's a cup final. We've got a load more to come, but I'm so positive about where we're going to end up right now.
Yeah, the thing that I noticed today, it's like some of the great players over the last 2 years started to look a little bit weak in the system today. You know, like the level just keeps on getting higher and higher and higher among certain players. But I felt that there's still been a bit of back and forth about whether we're playing good football. And sometimes crowd opinion takes a little bit of time to catch up. But some of that football today was scintillating. And then to add to that, I mean, the goals, the intricacy, the flamboyant finishing. I mean, it truly was exceptional. There was a little bit of a negative vibe towards the end of the game. But like, make no mistake, this is a young team under pressure delivering. Did you? And just before we get into the actual hottest of takes, there was a stat on NBC that said this is like half of our goals have come from players 21 or under, and there's I think only one team has had more goals come from under 21 players in the history of the Premier League. And when you start framing these statistics, because there's lots of disparate statistics coming together, but you know, there is something special brewing at Arsenal. Something special. This is like year one of a new project, so I'm really excited to get into the hottest of takes. Okay, all right, so let's get into the actual hottest of takes. That was fluffing. Yeah, a little bit of fluffing before we got into it, but like, what is the hottest of take? Let's kind of keep it to one strong one because I think we've got lots of individual areas that we can go to. Johnny Cochran, what is your hottest take today?
Well, you say one hottest take.
You're not going to do one.
I'm not going to do one anyway. Screw your rules. Thank you very much. It was a nice gesture, but look, I mean, I can keep it to particular players who I think, you know, we're probably all going to be talking about them at times, but need, you know, special commendation for what they dished out today, some serious beats. And that is Martin Ødegaard and Bukayo Saka, who was different gravy today. Them two are starting to take the piss on regular occasions. And you're going into Vicarage Road and you're saying, lads, this is Premier League football. You're not good enough, you know, apart from a few. And listen, I don't want to be too disparaging to them because they've put the beatings on other teams. Man United. They've had 4 points off them. 4 points. Tottenham Hotspur struggled to a 1-0 at Vicarage Road. They've gone to Villa and won. Like, Watford are not like a lame duck. It's not like
that's
Norwich or Leeds in recent weeks. Yeah, Watford carry, as we even saw within the game, you know, kind of as a bit of a sting in the towel, they do carry a threat. But we put a working on them. And you know, I do want to basically kind of hone in on Bukayo Saka and Ødegaard because of course, they were the most influential players within the game. There were others that I'm sure we're going to get onto. Laka, I thought Partey did really well. Defensively, apart from these weird moments, I think we were pretty sound as well. But overall, what you're starting to see is two players starting to kind of go a little step above everyone else. And you know how this can often happen. Some people might look at it differently and think, you know, it's almost a bad thing. But if you look at Liverpool and you look at Salah and Mane, they will often pass to each other the most. In fact, Mane gets a bit pissed off when Salah doesn't pass to him because he's a bit greedy. But the best players on a team, it's not like they even consciously do it all the time, I don't think. Sometimes they gravitate to the other best players because they know that the other best player is going to do something. And there's this kind of synergy between Odegaard and Saka now, which is bubbling, which is starting to give us all the feels of top-tier Arsenal teams before, because these boys look like they're ready to serve people up. If you come to play Arsenal and you ain't buttoned up, guess what? Something bad's going to happen. Boogeymen all over the pitch. Saka's running through, just doing what he wants. And that finish is... it only comes about from someone who is confident and is willing to take it. I'm not going to have another touch. I'm not going to squirm. I'm not going to, you know, get all nervous. It's at my feet. Whack. Top corner. What do you want to know? Pick the ball up, keeper, and let's get on with the game. And it's lovely to see. That's my hottest takes. But as you said, there's so much more to talk about.
Matt Candela, can you follow that up with something even more vibey than that? I mean,
I don't know. I don't know if that's possible. That was all the vibes. But I'll try. Well, look, it's the business end of the season. That's where we're at right now. And the only thing that matters is results. That's the only thing that matters right now. It's getting the 3 points. So first of all, it's amazing to get the 3 points. But what was even more exciting is all about the results. But we got such a great performance today as well. And the thing about the performance, it was just all, especially for the first half of the season, Johnny especially has been talking, and we all have about, where is the attacking coherency? Do you remember that dreadful day after Goodison Park where we just look absolutely lost? And now there's just so much coherency all the way through the team. And the thing that makes me excited the most about it all is that I don't think we are playing anywhere near our potential. I think we've got so much of a high ceiling, because even today there was so much wrong with our game, but it didn't matter because there was so much right as well. And with some upgrades, both just a bit more experience, a couple of personnel changes, it's just the sky's the limit with this team, I think. You know, we don't really have much going on down the left-hand side of the team. And if we can make that as functional as the right-hand side, well, we're in business. We still make a ton of mistakes. And if we can eradicate some of those, then we're going to see a whole other side of this Arsenal team. But we've got the framework in. I thought Thomas Partey was brilliant. He's just, ever since he got that 4 out of 10, he's been outstanding, knitting the whole team together. But Partey, Odegaard, Saka, I think were our three best players today. And we could afford some players who had some off days. I thought the defence looked a bit all over the place at times. I thought Xhaka was Xhaka. And Lacazette hates scoring goals. But other than that, beautiful.
Yeah, listen, it's difficult. I think you covered off most of it, but from an individual perspective, like I agree. Granit Xhaka wasn't great. Martin Ødegaard was absolutely sensational. Bukayo Saka is world class. I can't have it any other way now. I think his record speaks for itself. But my, you know, the bigger thing for me is that, you know, we're looking at games in blocks, and every game has an underlying narrative. You know, today's underlying narrative for me was going back to the last time that we played at Vicarage Road. We shipped 31 shots against Watford. And it was that moment when you were like, wow, Unai Emery is never going to get a hold of the defence at this club. I thought today we played to a really high standard. You know, that early goal that Watford scored could have shaken our confidence. It didn't. That bicycle kick that they scored was absolutely sensational. That deflated me. And you're like, how, you know, sometimes as a player, you're looking at that and you're like, is this going to be one of those days where we get done by goals like that? But we just kept on plugging away. And this team looks rock solid mentally. I think, Johnny, you said it in the last podcast. You were like, sometimes the naivety of youth actually carries you through. This team of players does not have the baggage of being shit like some of our previous squads. And I think it showed again today. Like, Arsenal were under immense pressure. You got people like Johnny Cochran on the Arsenal Opinion podcast demanding top four, and they're not flaking. They're not wavering. You know, I think that there's an element of the fan base that are demanding it and saying Arteta should be sacked because secretly they think he won't get top four. And we're just knocking back points. We are top four for real on March 6th. Man United are about to play Manchester City. I don't hold out much hope for them. Like, this is real. This is a real run. There were no injuries out there today. Leicester City feels winnable. Liverpool, you know, West Ham showed the way yesterday to a certain degree. You know, if West Ham had players in the final third that could score, they would have been in trouble. Maybe we get a point there. And then you've got Aston Villa to sort of cap off the month. Like, this is exciting. This is real. This is happening early. And, I, you know, like you said at the start of the show, Johnny, if you're an Arsenal fan and you're still whinging on about Arteta, if you're still whinging on about the football, like, your last year's news, my friends. This is the real deal. And I'm so excited that everybody's stepping up to the mark, because you don't expect it with young players. You expect a dip. And even Martinelli in the game, I was about to tweet he needs to come off, and then bang, he pulls a finish out of nowhere. It's like everybody's stepping up and everybody's feeding off each other. So I think it's an extremely exciting time to be an Arsenal fan. And I love waking up on a Saturday morning knowing that the Arsenal are about to play, because they're not going to let me down. So let's move into some topics. Firstly, let's talk about the spectacular goals. Bar the last one that Watford scored, that was an absolute treat today. That was I had problems with Wenger, you know, in the latter years, but there was a Wenger goal. There was an Arsenal sort of goal that was scored. Are we starting to get into that position now where this Arsenal side is starting to resemble some of that peak attacking play from the Wenger years? Johnny, what's your take on the goals?
So, I mean, let's think back to the dark days, okay, where, do you remember when we couldn't get together a goal of the month competition? Or, like, if you scored, you'd won it. Do you remember? Or they were pulling in goals from the under-23s or the ladies' team. And like, oh, yeah, it's a tough one. You know, because we were literally scoring a goal a month. It was horrible. Now, I'm not being funny. People are up all night sweating over goal of the month competitions after, because they're all going to come from that game. Lots of piss taking. It's what we all want to see. If you give me a chance, they're going in the top corner. Stop diving, keeper. You're wasting your time. It's wonderful. And what I'm saying about it, why it's so encouraging, is that things are starting to come instinctive now. And when they start coming, you know, at our worst, it was people overthinking things, taking extra touches, gun shy, no one pulling the trigger apart from Thomas Partey. I mean, you know, thank God he's taking a back seat and let some other people dish it out. But when it starts coming naturally, people need to watch out. You talked about some of these games upcoming. Listen, what I've said for a long time, and this is one area where, listen, we get different things right and wrong, you know, and we have to wear both. But one thing where I kind of will double down and say, actually, I think I did call this a while back. I said, number one, we need to be playing with Laka up top. He makes our whole team come together, in terms of the play. What I also said inbuilt in that was, if he plays as our central striker, the wing attack dudes, Martinelli or Smith Rowe when he plays, and Saka, they have to score goals. We don't have enough goals coming from our central striker for them not to be chipping in. So it's so encouraging when you see games like this. For me, Saka had that mentality today where he was like, I am not being on a losing team today. You know, you could see it. And I think that, you know, when we talk about attacking cohesion and coherency, it's looking like it's clicking into gear. And it looks like, whether you look at the Wolves game or you look at the Watford game today, even when met with adversity, heads aren't going down. They're playing towards a certain style of football. And again, to hark back to the darker days as reference point, do you remember when we, you know, used to talk about when we were from an attacking point of view, it looked like there was no idea. None of us could actually say what was meant to be happening. Whereas now, it's very clear what's meant to be happening. And there will be tougher games from an attacking point of view than Watford. They played into our hands a little bit, constantly trying to step up and leave him huge gaps in behind. And Lacazette was able to pick up the ball, you know, as he dropped short of the defenders and played balls around the corner. And we were just having our way with them. But, you know, this is what these games are about. It's about getting your confidence up, about, you know, Saka sitting in the dressing room right now going, I am actually sick, and I, you know what I mean? Whack. You see Ben Foster, whack. And then he'll be heading into that Liverpool game going, they're getting the work as well. Because I'm, you know, I'm evolving now. I'm stepping up. So really encouraging signs, you know, that not just defensively we've maintained a resolute nature. Of course, we have shipped a few, you know, a late goal there today, which was a little concerning. But overall, as Matt kind of keyed in on, the result is the all-important thing. And you will get things as we get towards the end of the season where late goals go in, it tests your nerve. But we're stepping up to the mark, and it's just brilliant to see. And the goals are just a cherry on the cake, to be fair.
Matt, are the goals the cherry on the cake, or are the spectacular goals also a sign of improvement at the same time?
I think it's both. I think the players are only going to get confidence from scoring those types of goals. It's not like an Eddie special from 2 yards or an own goal or scuffed in, you know.
You leave Eddie alone.
I know. I'm actually warming to him, I've got to say. When he came on, I was cheering him on, as always. But I'm feeling a bit more optimistic about him. Maybe he's got a couple of bangers in him this year. But yeah, just the quality of goals was just absolutely outstanding. And there's something about it where when goals like that go in, it makes you leap up and celebrate even more. And I think you saw the reaction from the players, especially Martinelli, for that finish as he ran towards the away end. And you can't help feel something when that happens. So it's great that we scored them. It's lots and lots of confidence. It's just a really, really exciting time to be an Arsenal fan. And yeah, a welcome reprieve from those dark days, you know?
Yeah, I agree that Eddie Nketiah could be the best striker in the Premier League. I agree with that point. I also wanted to, you know, my take on the goals is a broader point that props up my long-term agenda on this Arsenal project. There's still a bit of a naive view that there are silver bullets in the Premier League. And I think a lot of those silver bullets have been shot this year and they haven't hit the target. Building an elite level football club is about long-term thinking in 2022. And I didn't expect it to take as long as it did under Arteta. You know, I knew it wouldn't land immediately. And there were some, you know, shaky moments over the last 2 years. But I think what Arteta is proving is that time should be given to managers in the Premier League. And I say that because you've seen Ralph Rangnick come out this week and say United need an identity. They need a philosophy and they need to stick to it because all the best clubs have it. And Liverpool and Manchester City are long-term projects. You've seen, and I love this Antonio Conte thing. Arsenal fans are like, oh, you've got to stop going at Antonio Conte. Fuck off. And Antonio Conte has been the biggest counterpoint to Arteta this season because one of the greatest, most winningest managers in Premier League, or not maybe not in Premier League history, in football history, keeps on saying it is impossible to build a title-winning side inside 3 months. It's impossible. And he keeps on saying how hard this Spurs job is. And I think that this is what everybody's realizing. The Premier League is really, really difficult. And I'm just so happy that Arsenal took the difficult decisions this summer, built out a young squad, got the fans on side, because now we're starting to see some dividends paying out. And, you know, today was a glorious day. And Arsenal fans deserve it because we have been put through the ringer. We have watched some dreadful football. When Arteta first took over, we were averaging 9.5 attempts at goal per game. Now we're closer to 16, third highest in the Premier League. And that's taken 2 years to get there. And now the important thing moving forward is that we maintain stability. we tie down the players that we need and we keep on adding quality, because those goals today were spectacular. And I wouldn't have cared if we'd scored a two-yard screamer today. The result was the most important thing. But the cherry on top is goals like that tell you that you're moving forward with the project, tells you that you're progressing.
There's one thing I'd say as well about the spectacular goals is Arsenal in their prime have always scored spectacular goals. And it didn't matter. Like when you think about the Invincibles, and there's one game that really stood out for me, it was when I think we were like 3-1 down against Middlesbrough and the whole unbeatable Invincible record was fading. And it looked like we were going to lose when it really, really mattered. And then you just have players popping up and just banging in unbelievable, sensational goals, top corner from 20 yards, going past four players. And I think that when you become a team that's doing that, Liverpool have done it. Liverpool have been doing it for a few years now. It makes everyone stand up and be a bit wary. And it makes the team more confident, because it's like, even in dark moments, they know that they have the ability in a split second to completely turn the game on its head. And I think that that's what the ability to score spectacular goals does. It's we may be a goal down and with only a few minutes to go, but we know from that body of experiences that we have the ability to create something out of nothing that is what the other teams can't do.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Pete, so there's a few things. Firstly, I mean, if you look at it, you know, in a game where there's been like four spectacular goals, you know, different spectacular goals are not all built the same, okay? If you look at their spectacular goal, it was essentially a ball played into the area and a guy's hit a bicycle kick a la Trevor Sinclair, you know, at his in his pomp. It's wonderful to watch. And you're like, you know, you've got to, as even an opposing fan, clap, well done, great goal. When the kind of spectacular goals we saw from Arsenal were built around quick interchange. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because one of them is far more easier to repeat when you're in a groove. Because ours was just fantastic team play, which came from a team on the same wavelength, starting to, you know, click into gear offensively. And the other one was a shot in the dark, whack a ball in, and I'll try an overhead kick. 99 of them ends up in the stand. This one went in, and fair play to the guy. But ours, as we saw, we recreated it on a number of occasions, you know, between Saka and Martinelli's goal, very similar levels of quality. That's what hurts the other team in terms of their mentality. It's like, oh, these guys are just able to do this. You know what I mean? It's not, they're not whacking in, you know, random punts from nowhere. Just a final point as well, to kind of come back on you a bit, Pete.
Yeah.
Would you believe? But, you know, and it will, look, everyone's happy with how Arsenal are now, okay? And there will be a battle for, you know, for the history books, you know, that will emerge from fans and where you stood on different issues. I think that Arteta is showing his worth right now. And anyone who's not really seeing that, I think, is exercising a different agenda personally at this stage. But fans had every right to question what the hell was going on along the way, not least because this project that you're talking about, a long-term project, I think the fans would have been on board if Arteta had come in straight away, cleared deck and said, we're going to build around youth. It didn't happen for a long time. So we were, you know, we're bringing in players like Willian on stupid money. We've got players tied up in huge contracts. So let's not pretend that there weren't mistakes that were made along the way. There absolutely were. We are now bearing the fruits of a novice manager who's finally learned from those mistakes. And he's starting to flourish. And we can all celebrate in that and bask in that. But it's not like this was a sure thing. There's a lot of ways that this could have gone differently and at times where he was doing a poor job. But right now, let's not focus on that because he has learned those lessons. I think everyone who's not, you know, dug in, entrenched in their position can see it. And this is the best Arsenal team we've seen for a very long time, in my opinion. I think if we get top four, we can really create something special with this team.
I love that point that our spectacular goals are repeatable. I think that's exactly it, because it's not, oh God, we're a goal down. It's we have the body language in the team to just keep on repeating these spectacular goals over and over again for the next 10 years, in the same way that Henri did or Pires did. And they and think how many amazing goals that those two combined, and then Henri would bend it in. And you knew he was going to do it, and there was nothing you could do. And I think we're just going to see more and more and more of these. And I think, and I love that point. And I think that on the Arteta point, I think there's one other thing which I was thinking about, which is, you know, at Arsenal at any football club, you play a game every single week, and you really want. And as fans, we want to see an improvement every single week. You know, you always want to be improving. And we didn't see that, and it wasn't happening. But I also think that success in anything is not like, it's not a linear line. It's not like we get a bit better and a bit better and a bit better and then we end up good. It's like a bumpy road. But I think, and Arteta's alluded to it, it's like this, and Pete's always talked about it as well, to be fair, which is the project is going to bang. Like, there's going to be a moment. And then if we're like going like this, we're just suddenly just going to explode. And it feels like, I don't know exactly when that turning point was. It feels like it was at the end of last year. And then even the City game that we lost bizarrely felt like when everyone just stood up and took notice. But the project banged. And for the first time, we're going into a tough run of games. And I'm cautiously optimistic. It's still Arsenal, and we know that we can. There is no easy game, but, you know, I'm feeling positive.
The key point, and I'll let you come in, Pete. I know you haven't said, but if you want to pinpoint where it turned after our summer signings came in and bedded in, you're talking about a three-game stretch. You know, we were on the look at the start of the season, appalling start to the season, real big trouble. And then we're looking at players. There's no one who can sit here and say they knew when we signed Tomiyasu that he was going to be a nutter. No one knew that. Three games down the line, you're like, oh, right. He's not messing around. He's a serious right back. Aaron Ramsdale, hold my hands up. We all know what I was saying. I was worried about his ceiling. Turns out he's actually the absolute nuts. And once those players started bedding in, that's when it turned. It turned a mentality. And this is the final key. I'll just say, Pete, for you know, you can wax lyrical. Even these goals at the end, right? This goal that happened today, right at the end. I know this might not be in the right section, but overall, I think it's not that we want to see Arsenal concede, but in hindsight, when you see what's happened, I'm pleased that we conceded a late goal and we had to weather the storm, because what we're talking about is we all wanted to see a culture shift, right, at Arsenal. And that was too many players with a bruised and scarred mentality where they knew that if you put them under pressure, they will wilt. We've essentially got rid of that rot out of the squad, and then we're forging a new culture here. So I'd like to see some of these players put into the fire and see how they stand out. And guess what? Every time we've seen lately when they're under pressure, they respond. And that is not just like, oh, we're getting away from what we used to do. It's actually a proactive thing. They're building a culture of, no, we don't bottle it when the pressure's on. We're a serious unit, because our aspirations are not about getting top four. They're about getting top four this year and pushing on further next year and seeing Arsenal return to proper greatness.
Listen, some great points there. To counter your counterpoint, Johnny, yeah, absolutely. There were some mistakes in the system. I don't deny that. We started the project a year too late. I don't think it was a long time, you know, like that. We are only in this is his third year that he's started. But all managers make mistakes. And I think sometimes Arsenal fans, they preface the Arteta thing. They're like, but he's made mistakes. I watched Thomas Tuchel, who is a rock star manager, sub off third best goalkeeper in the Premier League and put Kepa on in a cup final last week. All managers make mistakes. It's how they learn from them. And I think Arteta has done a lot of learning this season, which has been great to see. I also wanted to sort of like, while we're talking about spectacular goals, I'm very influenced by the people I follow on Twitter. So I know that the opinions that I see aren't always mass opinions, but there was a little bit of a thing last week where a few people were saying, it's a bit worrying that Arsenal are relying on the individual brilliance of 21-year-olds. And my counterpoint to that was, why is it worrying when Spurs almost solely rely on the form of Son and Kane? Liverpool, I mean, they rely on a lot of individual brilliance, but, you know, you take Salah out of that side, And they're a different team. You take Mane out of that side, they're a different team. I think it's actually unbelievable that we're relying on the brilliance of players like Odegaard and Saka, because it doesn't feel like there's a dip coming. Arsenal have been ruthlessly consistent this season. Our points per game puts us firmly as the fourth best team in the Premier League. I actually think that it speaks to a very, very glowing future if the people that are pivotal to individual brilliance in your side are 21. Because you know what? 21-year-olds turn into better 23-year-olds. Great 23-year-olds turn into better 25-year-olds. I have to keep on reiterating this. Mo Salah at 21 had just moved from Egypt to Basel in Switzerland. Mane was a bit part player in France. Saka's showing up and doing a madness against Watford under pressure. I mean, where is this team going? I mean, Martin Odegaard, the ceiling is frightening. And I actually want to move on, because Martin Odegaard, he deserves his own section. I've got my good friend Alfred is sending me messages. Is he the best player in the Premier League at the moment? Listen, he is up there. He is an absolute dream of a player. I Cesc Fabregas is you know, one of our greatest creators ever. My favorite creator ever. I love watching Cesc Fabregas. I didn't know that football could be that creative until I watched Cesc Fabregas. When Cesc Fabregas is saying Odegaard and Saka are the future, you've got to pay attention, because that man knows creativity. Martin Odegaard, I mean, where has it come from? What were Madrid thinking?
Oh, it's a joy. And, you know, I'm always going to be a hard taskmaster for Martin, because at one point I was thinking, is it Odegaard or Smith Rowe? I know how I felt about that. But, I mean, Odegaard's the first name on the team sheet right now. And he's just established himself as the heartbeat of the team, the leader of the team. And people were talking about him as captain earlier on in the season, maybe just some noise from inside the camp and, you know, the usual stuff. And obviously he's captain of the national team, so that makes you think. But I can't say I really, really saw it early days. I can't really say that I thought he made sense as an Arsenal captain. Where we're at now, in my opinion, is that I don't think there's any other name on the list to be Arsenal captain other than Martin Odegaard. I think he's just seeing everyone off, game in, game out. And he's going to be the next Arsenal captain. He has got a massive chip on his shoulder. It's like Bergkamp, it's like Vieira. He thinks that he is good enough to play for teams like Real Madrid. And he is going to do everything in his power to prove that they made a mistake. And hell hath no fury, like someone scorned. And like, he is going to prove it every single day. He is going to make Madrid eat shit with every performance. Yes. And I'm there for every single bit of it. Odegaard for captain.
I love it. Johnny, you are, you've always been a cheerleader for Martin Odegaard. In the summer when there was talk of Madison, you were much more focused on Martin. That smug smile on your face says it all. Johnny, what is going on with Odegaard? And like, the agenda was correct, right? You got it right.
No, well, obviously, I did say that I liked Maddison. I said, well, Maddison's a good player. But overall, I said, you know, for that money, it would be stupid for us not to move on Odegaard, you know, and we did. And I think that he's got to a level now where, you know, all of the things Matt said, completely right. I love the way he was talking. Potentially, I would question the captaincy a little bit, but I'll go on to that. But overall, we're seeing, in terms of his output, two players are knocking on the door of world class at this point, and that is Odegaard.
Man City are winning.
They are winning. Yeah, De Bruyne has banged one in. So have that. You know, whenever you're listening to this, you know, United have probably been beaten horribly at this point. So that's good for us. But overall, back to Odegaard. He I do love, by the way, on our Twitter banter this week, Matt was talking about what other Arsenal factions there are, like the Pepe Dogs and the Ramsdalians, and someone put out the Odegaardians. And I think that was a great one. Really well done, whoever that was. Yeah. If you look at the first goal, some of the stuff when he's just playing in a fluid way, round the corner stuff, this is the interchange with Saka. It's into his feet. He's taking it and, you know, and turning with the ball and playing it into paths. When he took that in the return pass, you know, and bent it round Foster. It looked class, it looked confident, and it looked like, you know, because it was done so quickly. And this is one of the reasons why I questioned Ødegaard at time, or I had a potential question about him, was I worried about his pace. I still don't think he's the quickest player, but he plays so quick now. And that comes from his mental capacity to observe the game and know what's going on. He's so quick mentally, and I love to watch him. I think he's absolutely fantastic. Bargain of the summer goes without saying. The case made for Ødegaard, if you like to be captain, as Matt was saying, there was a point in the game, I don't know if everyone else saw it, but Partey basically had been called for a foul and he was just whinging at the referee. And, you know, bearing in mind, Thomas Partey is a big player. He's a, you know, he's a seasoned campaigner. He's got a big legacy and probably in our midfield should at least be the most respected member of the midfield. And he's whinging at the referee in a way that previous Arsenal teams have been caught out. Like the Xhakas, they're just not focusing on the game. Oh, ref. All of a sudden, we've been sucker punched. And Ødegaard walked over to him and just pushed him away, like, get on with it, you know. And I took note of that because I'm like, it speaks to how you revere yourself and you're also revered by other players within the squad. If you can do that to a senior player and be like, get on with the game, remember, stay focused. And that, I think, was the first moment where I thought, actually, Ødegaard does have that leadership skill because he commands respect. And he commands respect through not only, you know, his application to the game, but also, you know, the way he plays it. He plays with an authority. I do think that Kieran Tierney is also a potential and obviously looks like the more obvious one because they keep giving him the armband. But, you know, to just kind of finish off on to tie those points up in a bow, Pete, with your own one, it was the right plan to do this because even when you think back to Project Youth, you know, the first one under Wenger, you're talking about the idea of it. You know, we're talking about a philosophy here. If you can grow your own superstars, then they will, one, stay loyal because they haven't, you know, I think we've built our castles in, you know, on solid ground here because two of our best players, Martinelli's already asking to sign for life. You know what I mean? He'll donate a kidney to stay. That's great. You know, and Saka ain't going nowhere. You know, let him play the games about getting contracts, but they ain't. But Ødegaard now has that. You talked about him, Matt, but I'm going to actually introduce a real comp, and that is Thierry Henry, in the sense that been to a major, major club, big club, touted around Europe as a prestigious talent who was going to go on, but at that major club, never actually got into a stride and hit the heights, then comes to Arsenal and shows that actually they're not only good enough, you know, to play for Arsenal, they're good enough to play for any club in the world. But at that point, you have to also show a bit of loyalty to Arsenal, who've given you the chance to regain your career. And what Arsenal absolutely have to do to get the best out of Ødegaard and the long-term benefits of having him is make ourselves as a club big enough so that you don't have to leave us to achieve your dreams. And that means that we're back in the Champions League and looking competitive in that competition. Then why would you want to go? You've been to Madrid. Guess what? It's not as good as it seems. Arsenal, on the other hand, we're in the ascendancy. And as fans, we get to enjoy it.
Yeah. And I want to whisper this because I don't want to seem like I'm being blasphemous. But I get rumblings. And sometimes it's always people trying to push agendas for certain players. But the rumblings that I hear is that, like, Kieran Tierney is obviously a beloved player, but I think he needs a bit of extra care, a bit more of a sensitive soul. And I think Martin Ødegaard is perceived as a bit more of a leader. And the blasphemous part, I do wonder whether Kieran Tierney's performances of late have been a little bit shaky. And I think when you factor that in with the robustness, Martin Ødegaard doesn't, you know, touch wood, doesn't get injured much. And I think Arsenal have had a few captains over the years that spend more time on the bench. I'm thinking about Thomas Vermaelen. I'm thinking about Per Mertesacker, you know, even the, you know, William Gallas back in the day. Always, you need your captain on the pitch. And I think Martin Ødegaard increasingly looks like a player that's not going to get a lot of downtime because he's so influential. So, and also, Martin Ødegaard is the captain over Haaland. And I honestly think that speaks volumes. I mean, Haaland is the easiest person to give the captaincy to. So it says something about, you know, the character of the player. So either way, I think Arsenal fans will be happy with what... and to be honest, it's the first time in years where you're like, oh, wow, there's actually good choices for the captain's armband. I mean, Ben White looks like he could potentially be a captain. Aaron Ramsdale looks like he could potentially be a captain. I don't think we've had that sort of obvious, clear leadership on the pitch for the best part of a decade. So I think we're winning either way. I do want to move on to some slides because you know I love the slides. And if you're watching the podcast, get on the YouTube because the slides do help add a bit of context. We've got the Arsenal on the Whistle podcast. Look at those Twitter handle accounts there. Let's go into the first point of contact. If you are listening to this through your ears, which most of you do, picture this. I'm looking at a Premier League table. Manchester City sit atop on 66 points, about to go to 69 points because I suspect they'll beat Man United. Arsenal sit clear in fourth, 1 point ahead of United, 2 games in hand over them. And hear me out here. Hear me out. If we win our game in hand, we will be 2 points behind third place Chelsea. Guys, was this? Did anybody think that we'd be this close to third place on March 6th? I mean, it's starting to feel a bit real now, right?
I think it's very real. I mean, look, you know, some people said in the comments, but you know, it won't escape any Arsenal fans' knowledge. Chelsea ain't far off us, you know what I mean? And if we start beating people up the way that we have, we will be all over them, and we've still got to play them, and they don't look that great, you know what I mean? They're flat track bullies, and they're resolute and they're hard to beat. But guess who else sounds like that at the moment? Do you know what I mean? Guess who else are not conceding loads? Granted, a late goal today, but you know, in general, we're not. Who are starting to score goals? I mean, I think we carry more of an attacking threat than Chelsea do these days. Let's be honest about things. Do you know what I mean? They have a real striker issue. So do we. But our striker actually gets involved in the play, provides opportunities for other people.
He wants to be at Arsenal. He wants
and
to be
wants
at Arsenal.
To be there. Exactly. So, so you know, and they've obviously got, we don't know how it's going to affect him, but the issues with Abramovich, he wants to sell the club. There could be some real upheaval there. You know, even with regards to players feeling secure long-term and not necessarily knowing what to do. They've got games coming up. So, you know, I think that if we set our sights on third, we have more chance, if you like, mentally, of finishing in the top four at the very least. But and as I say, I don't think that Chelsea are insurmountable. But the key is what we're doing is handling our business. Because before it was like, you know, we're nervously watching the Spurs game. And then now you look at the thing, 6 points clear of them. You know, same amount of games. We've got, you know, a decent goal difference whack on them as well. So they'll have to start rescuing that. But more to the point, they are going to head into games a lot less sure about getting results in games. They've got Everton, who they should be have been, you know, struggling. But on the same note, if Everton turn up a bit, Spurs could easily capitulate based on the way they're playing. United, I think, do get beat today by City. And then, you know, at that point, and West Ham, for me, look already too far back. I don't think with 3 games in hand and 3 points behind us, they're going to be a team that would have to worry. But I would like to see us continue to get this buffer because we've got games against a couple of these bad teams. We've had some awful refereeing decisions against us this season. We don't want, you know, top four to disappear because they've given Harry Kane a penalty against us in the last minute or something like that. Let's get a buffer. So even if a couple of results go awry to our competitors, we can still have it within our hands. I think we will do it, which is why I've been so ardent that we need to get top four this year. Because if we are who I think we are, which is what is exciting me, we will get this top four. We will get top four. And if we do... Oh, woe betide the rest of the league. Saliba coming back, a big summer transfers, incomings. We could be a scary proposition moving forward. And that would be, you know, just amazing for us Arsenal fans.
Matt, when you look at that table, is there anything that stands out to you that outside us sitting in fourth? Is there anything that you're looking at and you're like, wow, this speaks to improvement?
Yeah, I mean, look, I actually have a different point of view around third and Chelsea. I think I think they're comfortable. They're going to get third comfortably. That's my honest opinion, because I think they're a better team than us. And I think they've got a lot of quality. And I just saw a sense with their game yesterday that their wobble is over. You know, when it comes to the business end of the season, I think Chelsea just deliver. I think that's what they do. It's annoying. Like, I'd love it if we were saying they're not Tottenham. You know, they're not Spursy. They're the ones who, when it gets tough, they get going. So I don't think third's an option, really. And that's fine. You know, we're not going to keep changing the goalpost. I personally think that what is happening now, and we've just heard that it's 1-1 in the United game, and I wasn't expecting that, but we'll have to see what happens. But I personally think we are in a straight shootout for fourth now with Spurs, because I think West Ham are out of it. I think Wolves are out of it. I think we've got these games in hand. And I think it's just going to come down between us and Spurs. I think the game against them is going to be really crucial. I think you can't underestimate. Things are great now. They are. We've got three really, really tough games. We've got Chelsea. We've got three, really. We've got Chelsea, we've got Spurs, and we've got Liverpool. As well as some tricky games. Newcastle away at the end of the season. Things like that. But it's really going to be how we perform in those big games. And if we can get points from those games, then we're home and dry. If we're not, it's going to be rocky. So I think it's going to be really, really close. I think it's going to go right down to probably the last game of the season still to get fourth. But we're in pole position. And that's all.
Just to clarify a couple of things. First of all, no, I completely agree, Matt. I wasn't suggesting we should set our sights on third and feel any kind of, you know, frustration if we didn't get it. I'm talking about, you know, the old adage, you know, shoot for the moon and you'll end in the stars. Like, reach in terms of your target, and you'll probably end up with what we secretly want. If Chelsea get third, so be it. I think they're way ahead of us in terms of, you know, their squad depth and all of those. You know, it's nothing other than I want top four, and that's all it comes down to. The other thing is, with regards to what I was going to say, so with Arsenal at the moment, if we can get that top four, just to kind of double down, I think it would be culture affirming for what we're about to do. I do think that it will be kind of us and Tottenham as well, but we've got a game against Leicester at home. They seem like they might have started to click into gear. If we can beat them, Man United play Spurs next. So you're talking about a situation where that game against Liverpool, it could be a bit of a gimme, because at the end of the day, even if we lose, we're not dropping points on someone, or they draw and they've not made enough ground up on us. So we're in a position now where as long as we beat those teams that we need to beat, it will not only be in our hands, but it will be imminently achievable for us to get top four. Because what we're not really factoring in, even in our doomsday scenario, is that these teams also have to play each other. So they can't win all the games. You know, all of the teams can't win all the games. And none of them look like they're good enough to, you know, to feel like ominously like they're going to go on a 10-game winning streak or anything. So, you know, it is in our hands for sure.
I'll tell you one thing, though, that we've had some great moments this season. The team stepped up. We're feeling good. But there's one thing, there's one piece of the jigsaw that is missing at the moment. And that is, can we do it against the top team? We haven't done it. Yep. We haven't even got a point against anyone. You know, even I think we've got a worse record than Crystal Palace against the top teams. And so we've got the end of the season. We're going to play those teams. We're going to play Liverpool. We're going to play Chelsea. I don't even consider Spurs a top team, but you know, can we finally show that we're a team in the making? Because if you're the fourth best team in the league, you can bloody some noses from the top teams. Spurs did it; they went to City and won. You know, we have to show against Liverpool and Chelsea that we have the ability to take points off the top teams, and that will be when they start sitting up and take notice. Because for years it's been, oh, we're playing Arsenal, that's a guaranteed 3 points against the top teams. And you know, we have got a great opportunity, and if we do it, well, that would be special, wouldn't it?
I also just want to, before we leave this beautiful conversational slide, I do want to talk about Harry Kane and Son. Spurs have scored 35 goals, Arsenal have scored 41, and United are in their 28th game. They've got 45 goals and we've got 41. So we're actually starting to catch up on the goals bit. And I think that that's where I want to take the next slide, because I want to do a bit of Lacazette propaganda. This is a Sky Sports stat, and it's our improvement after we dropped Aubameyang after the Everton game. So we've gone from 1.2 expected goals per game to 2.1. To 1.3 to 2. We're averaging 2 goals a game now. That's gone up a little bit after today. We've gone from 14 shots per game to 17. And we've gone from 23 touches in the opposition box to 33. It's been a radical shift. And although Lacazette is not the full package as a striker, it does point to, number one, the sort of striker that is needed in this system. And it isn't just a pure goal scorer. It's somebody that can bring the rest of our players into the game. And, my other point here is, like, Lacazette has completely lost his touch in front of goal. Another couple of examples today where he wanted to go down in the box rather than have a shot. I mean, like, it's almost like he's given up on goals. Right. And it's fine because, everybody else is stepping up. But what this says to me is, like, when you put in, like Arteta said in the week, they're like, what are you looking for in a striker? And he was like, goals, 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 goals. And I think that there's this, there's always Ivan Toney or whatever. And I know he scored a hat trick yesterday. I don't think we're going after someone like Ivan Toney. I think we're going to go after someone that's got a consistent record of scoring goals, at least 2 seasons of good goal scoring output this summer. And it sounds to me like Arsenal absolutely know who they're going after in that striking position. But Johnny, I wanted to go, and then Matt, I want to go to you. Like, the Lacazette improvement, did you expect it to be this dramatic?
I think we've got a system that works, or is working. I think it's
Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, 2-1.
2-1.
I think it's a bit of a patch job at the moment. I mean, obviously, maybe we were never going to get him. But imagine if we had Vlahovic right in the middle with this team. We'd be title contenders. We really would be. I love Lacazette. I love what he's doing. But I also feel like we're playing with 10 men. Today was embarrassing at times. So he's doing a lot of good stuff. I think it's all test. I think the whole team has improved. So I think that the stats are slightly misguided. But yeah, look, we're a proper team, and if we pull it off, we said if Arteta pulls this off, he deserves all the credit in the world. And increasingly by the week, it's looking like it. One fear I've got is what would happen if Lacazette gets injured. Like, I mean, do we think that we can overcome?
I think it's Smith Rowe. I honestly think it's Smith Rowe because I don't think Eddie Nketiah can do the hold up play job. And I think the Arteta said the other week, he said Smith Rowe could be a 9. Didn't say a false 9, just said a straight up 9. And that would get around the problem of trying to integrate Smith Rowe. And I think, Arteta keeps on going back to ideas that have failed in the past. Thomas Partey, when he originally was a single pivot, was a massive failure. Now he's not. Smith Rowe was a massive fail against Villarreal in the semi-final when people said that Arteta should have lost his job for that. But now you look at it and you're like, oh, wow, he's got goals. He's clinical. He can, he can pass on the turn. He brings players in. He can float left. He can float right. Like I look at the Smith as a number 9, and I'm like, I would love to see that. I don't know what you two think on that one.
No, I'm pleased you've said that. If you were going to continue with this ridiculous Eddie Nketiah cheerleading that you've been doing in recent weeks, no, that guy is not the answer. Not unless we've got a friendly against a championship team. I love his energy, but it's not for me, Eddie. Seen enough, and happy to call it a day in the summer. Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Ruthless.
It is what it is. Not. You're not going to be a part of where we're going. But to be clear, Smith Rowe, the Smithrance, is someone who I think absolutely can fill into that role because we know he's great with the ball at his feet, in tight areas. But, it's a position that needs crafting. You need to get experience. And of course, Pete, you're right. You know, when he had a go before, it's not something you just necessarily snap into and you're like, oh, I'm the nuts all of a sudden. He's got his confidence up in front of goal from playing on the wing. And now, you know, if he gets opportunities, he's already feeling like, yeah, I can score goals at this level for sure. And he absolutely would have to be the guy that can fill in. What we actually stumbled upon here, and it's a great question, Matt, Lacazette is absolutely integral right now to where we are. For a couple of games, we might, against weaker opposition, maybe not, but, you know, we might be fine. But over a prolonged period, we would really, really struggle. And that speaks to, you know, what he's doing for us at the moment. It isn't all about goals, considering. But what is key when we think about Arsenal at the moment is that we've built our system so it can account for one player, you know, not being there. Whereas before, we were so dependent on Oba and Laka's goals up front. When they were at the team, it was like, we're going to have a real problem. If Oba doesn't score, who's going to score? Whereas now, our main attacking threats are Saka and whoever's playing on that other wing. They're the most likely to score in this current setup. And people have talked about maybe Pepe coming in. Obviously, Martinelli, it was great for him to get a goal today. But what we can't do is, if Laka goes down, change the system, because then suddenly those players that are flourishing and having opportunities in front of goal wouldn't be, and we'd end up with a situation like we had with Aubameyang, where it's like, oh, actually, a key player's gone down and suddenly we look toothless, which is not the way to build a team at this stage.
I think Lacazette might end up staying next season. And I wouldn't be against it. There isn't a club in Europe that will pay him anywhere near what Arsenal could play him. Even if Arsenal said, listen, we can't give you 180, we're going to lower your salary a little bit. And his leadership is important. And I'm really concerned about going into the summer that we can't keep on hemorrhaging players that want to die for the shirt. And Lacazette might not be scoring goals, but he is the reason that we are banging at the moment. And I know that he can be a passenger. He looks like a passenger at times, but he got 2 assists today, you know? So he's doing a job and he likes doing the dirty work. But ideally, you know, we are going to upgrade him this summer with someone spectacular. And then he's an option. So it'll be interesting. Like, what sort of striker are we going to sign? Because there must be a very limited number of players that can offer his connectivity, but with goals. Yeah. And aerial presence and speed. So it'd be really interesting to see what sort of names get linked to us in the summer.
I mentioned Brozier, man. Like, and I know we're going to move on quickly, but just to finish on that, look, everyone went, Chelsea are not going to sell. I get the points that you're making. I really do, guys. It might be a little bit of a stretch. There's a lot of stuff going on at Chelsea. They might be wanting to cash in on people. They might not have that clear voice in terms of authority with Abramovich potentially moving on. Put a bid in. He's our profile of player. He looks very good on the ball. Looks like he can link up play and looks a better finisher than Lacazette. I'm not saying he is the answer in of himself. If we can do better, we should get it. But Brozier looks like he would fit in this Arsenal team and flourish.
And you know, there's not really a path in Chelsea's system for him.
Yeah,
right. You're just gonna. I know Chelsea would happily burn £100 million striker, but ultimately they don't have. You know, everyone talks about how well Chelsea are run. You know, it's the big PR thing that goes off. Chelsea have got £100 million striker sitting on the bench, an £80 million goalkeeper sitting on the bench. They sack managers every 18 months. I'd be interested to see if their leadership gets away with that under a poorer leadership model and the flash sale mentality. They've got 30 days to sell that club. Flash sale. Oh, I love it. You can't possibly make a good decision there. You cannot make a good decision there. They are not an consortium split between America and Switzerland. Oh, it's lovely, exactly it? What they deserve. It's exactly
get Mike Ashley in there as well. You know, sports direct in their stadium. That'd be lovely. That's what they deserve, them horrible fans.
So, look, we've been doing this for an hour. Before we go, I just want to quickly talk about the fixture list coming up. We've got like a run. I think we've got 3 more games in the month of March. We've got Leicester City. We've got Liverpool.
Yeah.
We've got Aston Villa. What's a realistic points haul for those games?
keeps us in the mix.
I've seen a lot of suggestions, but I think we've got to be looking at 7 points. And if we can get seven, then we're home dry, I think. I really think we could be home dry for fourth if we get 7 points from the next three. Leicester at home is a must win. It's a must win. Because it's at home, because Leicester haven't been the force that they were last year, this year. That's a must win. Because you don't want to go into the Liverpool game on the back of a defeat. You want to go in there on the back of six wins in a row, feeling buoyant. I'm going for seven.
For me, I'm going six. I think that our season will not be derailed by losing to Liverpool, who seem to, you know, out of the big teams, right? When you were talking about quite beautifully, Matt, and very, very on point about we need a signature win or a couple of signature wins against big sides to kind of really rubber stamp our evolution or our, you know, return, if you like, to the top tier. Even within that, sometimes you end up with teams who just have your number. And at the moment, Liverpool, with the way that they're set up, look like they are going to get the better of us quite a lot. You know, more than I fancy us to beat City more than I fancy us to beat Liverpool, just because they carry such a threat on the break and they're so good at pressing. Even though we've much improved, like playing out from the back, Liverpool can create problems for us because we've still got brain fart players who like to do those kinds of things. So if we were to lose against Liverpool, I think that because we've been handling our effing business, you know, we've been getting our shit together, it means that if we lose that game, we're still going to be clear of everyone else pro rata if we win the other games that we're to win. So I do think we need 6 points. If we were to draw with Leicester, I think that's not what we absolutely want to avoid that, but I do think that, you know, we go return to the points I think Pete talked about last time as well. But, you know, everyone has to, you know, stay, you know, aware of it. And that is that even when we think about how other teams might catch us, that's presuming they win all their games. These are flawed teams. That's why they are where they are. The idea that Spurs are going to go on a 10-game winning streak, United, it ain't happening for me. I don't see it. That none of these teams are that good. So I do think that we'll drop some points in places we're not expecting, and I don't think the wheels would have to come off. But, you know, with games like Liverpool, games that are going to be towards the end of the season against big, big opponents, I think that we need to, you know, as best as we can, take care of the teams that we should beat. Leicester are certainly one of them, and we need 6 points out of nine, in my opinion. You know, that's the best outcome, really.
That's the story of the season for Arsenal against last year. We didn't win the games that we were supposed to last year, and we missed out by top four by 6 points. You know, you win both your Wolves games last year. We're in the top four, or you know, maybe not on goal difference. And I think it's if Arsenal keep on winning the games they should, then we will make top four this season. But I am a little bit with Matt. I would just love to see us do something against Chelsea, Liverpool, and 100% there is a cup final for us against Spurs, and there is the opportunity for Mikel Arteta to impose himself on Conte. And I honestly think the best thing for us that happened this year is that Spurs hired Conte, because Graham Potter would have been a bigger worry. Graham Potter wouldn't be saying that top four is impossible. Graham Potter wouldn't be constantly reminding Spurs fans that they're shit. And I think that is contributing to the depression at Spurs. Like, Harry Kane will show up against Manchester City, didn't want it against Burnley, you know? So it's you're right, Johnny. The assumption is United are going to go on a run. West Ham are going to go on a run. Spurs are going to go on a run. But they've all got fuck-ups in them as well. But I think the key point to remember as well, Arsenal have got a big fuck-up in them. You know, there was some big defensive lapses today. There were some defensive lapses against Wolves. Like, it's not going to be plain sailing, but the fact that we won today is positive, and I really fancy us against Leicester, and then we'll see what happens against Liverpool and what the reaction is to that after. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. We've done an hour and 6 minutes. I just want to say thank you to all of the people that sit on the YouTube and the Twitch channel and contribute. It's so much fun reading the comments. I also love the positivity of everyone that reads the YouTube. I know YouTube can be a bit of a cesspit, but the following that we get, the lovely comments that we get, the emails that we get after, like, it really does make it all worth it. And thank you to the podcast listeners as well. Our numbers have been going through the fucking roof lately. So we appreciate your loyalty and the fact that you want to spend an hour with us after every game. Like, honestly, I cannot tell you how hard podcasting is. And it's just a pleasure that you're listening to it. I also want to thank the two stars of the show. It's Man Like Matt Candela and Johnny Cochran. Johnny, where can people find you on the internet?
The internet, similar place to where they can always find me, is at iJohnnyCochran, and all my socials. Do come and drop us a little follow. Helps me out. And yeah, it'd be good to chat all things Arsenal. Maybe you could retweet something that I have posted that I find funny, like this week when I tweeted out the little Made in Chelsea clip as a reference to Tottenham fans asking Harry Kane to stay next year in the summer. You know, it's funny stuff. You know, I don't write my own reviews, Pete, but, you know, I think over 100 retweets probably means it's worth a come and follow me, guys, at iJohnnyCochran. So there you go.
Listen, man like Matt Candela is also dropping some banging tweets of late. Matt, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, he's muted himself.
Oh, he's muted. Ah. Amateur.
Amateur hour. Amateur hour. Nearly made it all the way through without that fuck up. But yeah, find me at Matt Candela. I'm so excited about the business end of the season. Going to be tweeting about Arsenal every single day, never stopping. We are getting top four. We're going to be there every step of the way. I cannot wait.
Magic. And if you are listening to this via iTunes or Spotify, give us a 5-star review. Write something nice. Do your bit for the creator community and help us push up that 5-star rating. And on that note, I will say ciao for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.